This is the first time I've ever been to Argentina. In fact, I've previously never been further south than Texas. You can hear milling around me the Sunday buskers at the San Telmo market in Buenos Aires, with tango bands and dancers. But what of the inevitable stock images from central casting that I've brought with me? Maradona's infamous Hand of God is probably uppermost. The Falklands or Malvinas War of the early 80s. And Madonna, not Maradona, as Evita Perón on the balcony singing Don't Cry For Me. And on the bookshelf, the sparkling, enigmatic short stories of Jorge Luis Borges, without which Gabriel Garcia Marquez might never have written 100 Years of Solitude. Borges puzzles and attracts me. During the 60s and 70s, he was, without doubt, an international literary superstar. And that's when I first became aware of him, when his blindness was an intrinsic part of his persona. And students the world over, of the Sorbonne, Harvard and the ICA, would sit at his feet in their caftans and flares and lap up his every gnomic utterance.
I must declare my interest straight away, Señor Borges. My first reading of your Ficciones was exactly the experience Keats describes in those famous lines about stout Cortes, silent upon a peak in Darien, looking at the Pacific. And I think everyone who reads your work for the first time has that feeling. Is it because you yourself feel like that about the world we live in?
I can hardly answer that question. I am not being astonished all the time. And if I am astonished, it's not because of the world we live in, but because simply of the world. I mean, the mere fact of living in a physical body, the facts of childhood, boyhood, manhood, old age, all those facts are really astonishing me. But I never think in terms of the present as being essentially different from the past, which means, of course, that I have no historical sense, that I lack it. I'm rather falling back on the old perplexities, the perplexities that make for the metaphysics and philosophy. I wonder whether I am quite aware of this age as being different from others. I do not think I am. And this, of course, stands for the fact that I am not politically minded.
Borges as gnomic seer. Born in 1899 and educated overseas in Switzerland during the First World War, he was, by the 1960s, and certainly to his hippie admirers, a serene but baffling and strangely compelling presence, as Borges' biographer Jason Wilson recalls.
The main thing that strikes me now looking back is that Borges was not part of the rest of the crowd. We're talking about the late 60s and early 70s, long-haired people, no ties, all that sort of sartorial freedom of that period. And Borges was in his shiny suit, dressed in a very conservative way, with beautifully polished shoes. I've never forgotten the polished shoes, for instance. Mm-hmm. And you thought, what is this man doing amongst us? And yet, his mind, the imaginative way he talked, made all of us seem as if we were in the suits and he was the hippie.
Borges' biographer, Jason Wilson, who we'll meet again later here on the streets of Buenos Aires. In a way that's virtually unthinkable today, Borges was a dedicated lifelong reader, a bibliophile utterly steeped in world literature, whose playground was the world of ideas. Not only a librarian par excellence, he was also an urbane man of letters, an essayist, a reviewer, poet, and polemicist, all of which was a precondition for his activities as a writer.
When I was a young man, I was trying to be, well, Sir Thomas Browne, or Luones, or Quevedo, or somebody else. But now I know my possibilities or impossibilities. I am Borges. That's that. I have to put up with it.
That's Borges speaking just years before his death in 1986. But I've long been haunted by a memorably paradoxical phrase of his made 30 years earlier, when he was appointed director of the Argentine National Library, which stands behind me here in this busy part of Buenos Aires. He wrote, "I speak of God's splendid irony in granting me at once 800,000 books, and darkness. It's haunted me because it precisely captures my own relationship with the world of literature, my own long-standing struggle to gain access to great works unavailable in Braille. The phrase is typical of the man's whimsy, paradox and playfulness, behind which he hid. His works, none of them more than 10 pages long, can resemble shimmering halls of mirrors, characterised by the recurring motifs of libraries and labyrinths, no more so than in this short story, written in the 1940s, The Library of Babel, the entire universe being represented by its symmetrical structure.
The universe, which others call the library, is composed of an indefinite, perhaps an infinite, number of hexagonal galleries with enormous ventilation shafts in the middle, encircled by very low railings. From any hexagon, the upper or lower stories are visible interminably. The distribution of the galleries is invariable. 20 shelves, 5 long shelves per side, cover all sides except 2. Their height, which is that of each floor, scarcely exceeds that of an average librarian.
Buenas tardes. Vengo a buscar un libro de Borges, a ver si está disponible acá en la Biblioteca Nacional. Ficciones, por favor, alguna de las ediciones de Ficciones.
Okay, buenas tardes. Mira, el tema es así, los libros...
Dr. Horacio González is no average librarian. He's the current director of the National Library. I've been joined by him in one of the 2 main reading rooms, which looks out through very large light windows on the estuary of the River Plate. We are amongst the books, which since his famous predecessor's day has expanded to 1 million titles. Dr. González, first of all, what does Borges mean to you personally?
It's an issue that I've given a great deal of thought to over many years now, and it's something upon which new light is continually being shed. Libraries were, of course, a recurring motif in Borges's work, continually exploring the concept of this vast, endless library in which all aspects of human civilization are held. Not only Argentina, but the world, the entire universe.
Where do you think that obsession with libraries and labyrinths and knowing all knowledge, having all knowledge, where does that come from with Borges?
Borges se burló muchas veces de sus obsesiones.
Borges continually mocked and ironized himself. The ubiquity of concepts such as libraries, swords and mirrors in his work are all part of his conceptual armoury, part of his elaborate practical joke, the manifestation of his sense of irony.
How much do you think it might have to do also with his blindness, the fact that he always knew that time was short for him in a way, as far as reading and knowing was concerned?
Borges interpretó el acto de lectura de muchas maneras.
Being aware that he was becoming blind, Borges approached the world as if it was a blank sheet of paper, and his memory and the physical world around him and the many people who came to act as his readers all kept him in touch with it. They helped him retain his sense of the world as a kind of map around which he would find his way. He continued going to the cinema after he became blind and relied upon all his other senses.
Like all men of the library, I have travelled in my youth. I have journeyed in search of a book, perhaps of the catalogue of catalogues. And now that my eyes can scarcely decipher what I write, I am preparing to die a few leagues from the hexagon in which I was born. Once dead, they will not lack pious hands to hurl me over the banister. My sepulchre shall be the unfathomable air. My body will sink lengthily and will corrupt and dissolve in the wind engendered by the fall, which is infinite. I affirm that the library is interminable.
If there had been a Nobel Prize for talking, then Borges surely would have won it. He loved to talk, exclusively almost, about books and literature, and he loved to do it in cafes. I'm in the Richmond Cafe, which is vast. Tango playing in the background, which he loved, and where he would meet people. It's on the Calle Florida, And with me is Jason Wilson, who is one of Borges' biographers. He's also written virtually a street-by-street cultural history of Buenos Aires. Jason, put this cafe in perspective for me. What did this mean to Borges?
Well, first of all, it was between home and work. So he would walk and he would stop in here and have a cafe with whoever was taking him, his mother, for a long time. It was also a place from the 1930s where he would meet different literary friends, but always of a conservative nature. So it was an area, you can see by the oak panelling and the hunting prints on the wall, that it focused on a certain kind of idealised England. And remember that Borges was totally bilingual. He spoke English all the time. And so he would escape from the street. It was a street for pedestrians, you know, very porteño, very Argentine, very noisy, everybody talking. And he would come in here and he would probably speak English as well as Spanish.
Because it took him quite a long time to get going, didn't it?
It took him, it did. He was always writing. But I think because he read so much, he had a highly developed sense of what was worth writing. And he didn't feel anything he'd written until the 1940s was worth writing. He constantly rewrote what he'd written. You know, even his poems, you'd think a poem can be fairly fixed. But he would rewrite it and change it. So he was very dissatisfied. And you're right, he found himself in his late 30s and 40s in this odd combination of short story, critical essay that he made his own, which was the fiction.
Man, the imperfect librarian, may be the work of chance or of malevolent demiurges. The universe, with its elegant endowment of shelves, of enigmatic volumes, of indefatigable ladders for the voyager, and of privies for the seated librarian, can only be the work of a god. In order to perceive the distance which exists between the divine and the human, it is enough to compare the rude, tremulous symbols which my fallible hand scribbles on the end pages of a book with the organic letters inside, exact, delicate, intensely black, inimitably symmetric.
Well, we're walking out of the Richmond Cafe and coming out into the street, the Calle Florida. And Jason Wilson, it's a bit like coming into another world, isn't it? Stepping from an old world to, bustling 2009.
Absolutely. We've moved into a street with street sellers, people sleeping on the ground, the homeless, tourists, people walking to work, everybody in shirt sleeves. I think we're leaping out of a century into another one and out of a culture into another one. We're moving from a sort of idealised Englishness into a Latin American city.
I'm fascinated about this city, really, for a blind person to walk about, as Borges did, although, of course, he did much of his walking before he lost his sight, because it's got the grid system. Now, it was in my 30s when I discovered a grid system. I went to New York, and it kind of changed my life, because with the numbers and the way that the grid system works and the way that streets are labelled with east and west, I could suddenly navigate independently. Would that have been a factor?
Well, it's something I haven't thought of. It's a rather wonderful idea. Had he taken that as you've expressed it, he probably wouldn't have needed somebody to help him walk. So it makes me think, maybe he wanted someone to help him walk because he also wanted to talk.
So he combined the walking and the talking.
Yeah.
Because he would have, I mean, when he lost his sight, he'd have had a pretty much complete map of Buenos Aires in his head, wouldn't he?
I'm absolutely convinced he was preparing for blindness for a long time. His myopia was already blocked him away, as it were, from faces seen at more than 10 yards away. He couldn't have seen expressions and things. So I think he was preparing for it completely.
Yeah.
I wonder often how much he bothered to do what you'd expect him to do as a blind person. He didn't learn Braille.
Did he have a stick?
He did have a stick.
He did, right?
Yes. Yeah. And he was well known for his stick. No, he was a public persona. Everybody could recognise him. So there was no doubt about that. And I think the grid system and the regularity of the block system, now I'm thinking about it, obviously helped him. He played it down. He always said it wasn't a catastrophe. He didn't scream with pain when he discovered he'd gone completely blind. He took it normally. He continued his life.
Yeah.
It wasn't a tragedy.
Well, actually, that's a rather modern idea of blindness, which I don't suppose Borges took from, you know, disability politics. I think he took it from his own way of looking at things, yeah. really. But it's interesting. It would have squared with a lot of blind people who would now say, it's a part of my life, it's another way of living, which is what Borges says in his essay on blindness,
yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Borges, though, as we were saying, did reflect upon his blindness in some of his works. This is his celebrated poem, In Praise of Darkness.
Old age, the name that others give it, can be the time of our greatest bliss. The animal has died or almost died. The man and his spirit remain. I live among vague, luminous shapes that are not darkness yet. Buenos Aires, whose edges disintegrate into the endless plain, has gone back to being the Recoleta, the Retiro, and the rickety old houses we still call the South. In my life, there were always too many things. Democritus of Abdera plucked out his eyes in order to think. Time has been my Democritus. This penumbra is slow and does not pain me. It flows down a gentle slope resembling eternity. My friends have no faces. Women are what they were so many years ago. These corners could be other corners. There are no letters on the pages of books. All this should frighten me, but it is a sweetness, a return. Of the generation of texts on earth, I will have read only a few, the ones that I keep reading in my memory, reading and transforming. From south, east, west, and north, the paths converge that have led me to my secret centre. Those paths were echoes and footsteps, women, men, death throes, resurrections, days and nights, dreams and half-wakeful dreams, every inmost moment of yesterday and all the yesterdays of the world, the Danes' staunch sword and the Persians' moon, the acts of the dead, shared love, and words, Emerson and snow, so many things. Now I can forget them. I reach my centre, my algebra and my key, my mirror. Soon I will know who I am.
In Praise of Darkness, a poem by Borges, who prided himself on being a man of regular habits.
I arrive at the National Library at 9 o'clock, and then I go on dictating my own stuff until it's, well, let's say 1 or so. Then I go home, and then in the afternoon I work with Di Giovanni on the translation of all my works into English. And we try to avoid the dictionary. And in fact, we both try, after reading a sentence, to rethink it in English. So we don't have to stick too pedantically to a text. And this is a very enjoyable experience. In fact, I don't think of it as work, really. But I don't think you should ever think about your work as being work. Because if not, you can't do it. If you can think of your work in terms of fun, or of enjoyment, or better still, of happiness, then your work shouldn't be too bad.
Borges there was referring to Norman Thomas de Giovanni, who worked closely with him in the late 60s on the English translation of his work. We try to convey the unique flavours of truly great writers by referring, for example, to the Proustian, the Joycean, and the Kafkaesque. Here, de Giovanni tries to convey what the term Borgesian means to him.
The Borges story is fundamentally ironic. It is not a medium for communicating experience, if only because it is constantly reminding us that, regardless of its manner and style, it is no experience to communicate. How many times have we been lost in a library with an infinite number of books? When did we last see a map as large as the country it was meant to represent? What, then, is a Borges story about? Nothing. And in this is everything. Borges is too modern not to acknowledge the artifice and artificiality of plot, and constantly undermines it by a humor that verges on self-parody, but is too profoundly attached to it ever to contemplate letting plot go. He writes an old-fashioned fiction in a way that an age suspicious of fictions can accept. He is the sea voyager who is landlocked, the peasant farmer who must invent not only his own village, but the gossip that goes on inside it. He is Borges, making up stories purely and solely for effect. And the result, a fiction that seems to be a pure fiction, an aesthetic experience as concentrated as music.
Paradoxically, when Borges became blind, he chose to immerse himself in a close study of early English, of Anglo-Saxon and Old Norse.
If I have two students, if one of them has but slight knowledge, then you go in for Old English. If I have one, then you go on to Old Norse. And I'm looking forward during all the week to that holiday, you know, because to me it's a holiday. I enjoy teaching, well, because I enjoy learning. And as I can't do it through my eyes and through my memory, I have to fall back on young eyes and on young memories. So my students are really my teachers, though they're too polite to say so, of course.
Well, I've come along to the Institute of Foreign Languages in Buenos Aires, and I'm with Estrella Garcia. And Estrella was a student of Borges back in the early 70s. Can I ask you what they were like? What it is about his lectures you remember?
Eran clases fascinantes, muy particulares.
His classes were fascinating, very interesting, and he also used a lot the irony. And he used to talk in a very low voice.
Buenas noches, alumno.
Did that make him difficult to follow? Talking in a low voice.
Nos esforzábamos mucho.
Yeah, they had to make a big effort, but they were so enthusiastic about about being with him that make it easier for them.
Can you describe him for me? What did he look like?
Delgado.
He was thin.
Un poco inclinado.
He was like a hunch with a stick, with almost closed eyes. And he was always willing to answer his students' questions about his work and about the changes blindness was producing on his work also.
Lo que no soportaba eran las preguntas de los estudiantes que llevaban una respuesta.
For example, one of the questions could be, teacher or Borges, the symbol of the mirror structurally in the narration has something to do with your blindness. He didn't like this kind of questions.
Did he think that was a kind of a naive question, a kind of obvious question?
Yes. He used to say that just a few authors deserve to be read.
Milton, Grusak,
Chesterton. What was it that made his lectures so?
Era muy enamoradizo con tales.
He frequently fall in love with girls.
Did the girls fall in love with him?
Yes.
Did you fall in love with him?
En algún aspecto sí, pero no en todos.
In one aspect, can be.
Intellectually, perhaps you fell in love with him.
And also effectively, because he was very attractive or very supportive with his students.
Estrella Garcia. Clearly, Borges, her former teacher, made a deep and abiding impression on her, and she in turn is much loved by her students today. Meanwhile, that story, The Library of Babel, continues to unwind, a bit like moving through the chambers of a nautilus shell.
Everything is there. The minute history of the future, the autobiographies of the archangels, the faithful catalogue of the library, thousands and thousands of fake catalogues, a demonstration of the fallacy of these catalogues, a demonstration of the fallacy of the true catalogue, the Gnostic Gospel of Basilides, the commentary on this gospel, the commentary on the commentary of this gospel, the veridical account of your death, a version of each book in all languages, the interpolation of every book in all books.
Now we're walking down Suipacha and we're coming to Alberto Casares, a secondhand bookshop, which is a patriotic bookshop. Borges spent his last afternoon in Buenos Aires here before going off to Geneva with his liver cancer and dying. And there's a photograph at the end there of him in this bookshop on his last day.
Presumably, it would have been a very conscious act to come here on his last day in Buenos Aires. He would have known, wouldn't he, that it was his last day?
Yes, he would have done. Yes, yeah. They had the tickets to go and everything. He was rushing away. And there have been a lot of issues about why didn't he want to die in Argentina. After all, he was a patriot. A lot of his works and his poems are about, you know, his version of being an Argentine, Argentine history, you know, going back to the Gauchos, etc., etc., and his own family involvement in local Argentine history. Why did he go and die in Geneva? And there are many, many stories about that.
But it almost reinforces with what you've just said about why he left. That there isn't a moment in Borges' life, is there, that isn't surrounded in puzzles and little mysteries.
Yes, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. He was a very contradictory man. And, you know, one of the things that I've worked out is he remained, despite his conservative facade, he remained quite an imp. You know, he was a difficult character. He remained slightly avant-garde always. His views were never predictable. His unpredictability was what made him always an interesting thinker.
Yeah. Mischievous.
Yes, definitely, definitely. It's a key word, definitely.
I dare insinuate the following solution to this ancient problem. The library is limitless and periodic. If an eternal voyager were to traverse it in any direction, he would find, after many centuries, that the same volumes are repeated in the same disorder, which repeated would constitute an order. Order itself. My solitude rejoices in this elegant hope.
Right at the end of the Library of Babel, there is the closing line of the story is about consolation. And the consolation of this massive, infinite library of impossible books is that there will be a book that he will be able to read. And one wonders what that book is. You know, it's probably an anthology of all that he's read.
Or an anthology of anthologies, yes. Possibly.
No, I can't believe in a personal God, and I don't believe in personal immortality. I have no use for that kind of thing. As I said in a poem, I want to die wholly, I want to die utterly.
Libraries, Labyrinths, Borges and Me was presented by Peter White. The reader was Gabriel Wolfe. The producer in Bristol was Mark Smalley.